Coming up this Sunday, Bethany Baptist Church Lecture Committee is presenting Celebrating the Life and Legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It's happening Sunday at 2:30 at Bethany Baptist Church, and we have three people directly involved with the program on Sunday. Thrilled to welcome Reverend Carlos Nichols, the Minister of Music at Bethany Baptist Church. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also joining us is Father Edwin Leahy, the headmaster at St. Benedict's Prep School here in Newark. Father Leahy, always great to see you as well.
Happy to be here again.
And Jackie Harris is the chair of the Bethany Baptist Church Lecture Committee. Jackie, we know that you have all kinds of great stories. We will limit them on this interview. Just kidding. Welcome.
Thank you. It's always good to be here.
So let's start with you, Reverend Nichols. As Minister of Music at Bethany Baptist Church, it occurred to me, are you aware of what Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s favorite song was, or maybe favorite artist?
That is actually a very good question, and I think you may have stumped me straight out the gate. However, I can recall in many instances his request of if I can help somebody, actually, being one of his favorites, if not the favorite, that actually aligned with his call and his work. Being actually from Memphis, Tennessee, I've heard those stories of him requesting that song quite often, especially with the refrain, "My living shall not be in vain," which leaned heavily into what I felt his call was.
One thing about this program, we know the music will be spectacular. Not only are you providing the music, but also the wonderful choir, the Bethany Baptist Church Choir, and Cassandra Wilson will be there as well.
Absolutely. What an absolute joy to be able to experience and be able to present so many varied styles and to have Cassandra Wilson in the building. I've heard her albums, multiple albums, and to actually have her in that space is going to be an absolute joy, along with the rich history of music that Bethany has always presented. So we're so excited.
Gary Walker, our morning host, has always talked about one of the very first times that Cassandra Wilson made her way into the WBGO studios. It was really before anybody knew who she was.
Wow.
And obviously became a huge star after that. Jackie, the program that's put together for Sunday at 2:30 at Bethany Baptist Church is going to be an exciting program as always. But when you're putting this together and you're thinking about what do we want, what goes through your mind? Because as we look at Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and his message, we're still so far away from some of the things that he tried to accomplish, aren't we?
Well, there's a great committee of, I think it's about 15 or 16 of us, and we all start talking about what we would like to do and where we would like to focus. We start that about 6 to 7 months before we really make decisions. Our objective is really to look at Dr. King's life and his accomplishments and to see how we compare those things to what's happening today. And if we really just look at what was going on in the 60s, a lot has changed, but a lot has not. And so all of us have input on who the speaker is. We've got a long list. We are just working down that long list of people, so we have others. But we felt that Jonathan Capehart definitely was an individual who we should and could present. And the church never has a lot of money. So when I called him, as soon as I mentioned Newark, and he said yes right away.
For those who aren't familiar with Jonathan Capehart, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, the opinion writer focusing on the intersection of social and cultural issues and politics, he is with the Washington Post. He's a part of the editorial board there, also has his own podcast, Cape Up, and a regular contributor on MSNBC. And you and I were talking, Father Leahy, before we came into the room today, how you kind of got the early word from Jonathan when he was a student at St. Benedict's Prep that maybe he would follow this path.
Yeah, it's very interesting that to be a 15, 16, 17-year-old young man growing up in Newark, and he wanted to be the anchor on NBC's Today Show. That was his goal as a 17-year-old. You don't find many 17-year-olds saying that and then actually carrying out that kind of a desire. So yeah, he knew very, very young that he wanted to be, number one, a critic in one sense, in the best sense of the word, and a social commentator. And he actually has done it. It's amazing.
You're going to be introducing him during Sunday's program, and knowing that he's the keynote speaker, when you've seen a young man at that age and now, you know, an adult who has carved out a real career for himself and a real message that he has always tried to stick to, where's that pride come in? You've had so many unbelievable students come through your halls. What are you feeling inside as you're going to introduce him?
Well, it's always an honor because it's an honor to be with all of those young men that I get the chance to be with every day in the school, and then to watch them grow up and to begin to make contributions is humbling, because all we do is accompany teenagers through a very, very difficult time in their life. And where we live, it's not only difficult, but it's frequently dangerous. And so it's a humbling experience to watch them grow up and be able to do what they do, and to think that we had some small part. What we try to do most at school, Jonathan has actually carried out, and that is to create voice. Because so many young men of color feel that their voice doesn't matter in this country. And now, in our own moment, perhaps even more. To create voice, to amplify voice, is what we do. And he does a great job of it now as an adult.
At St. Benedict's Prep, how often are those discussions with these young men about having a voice and that you are going to be heard and that you can make something? As I told you recently, I was honored to be part of a sports panel there, and we were talking to your students about how you react to the media when you're an athlete and how you interact and those thoughts. And they came up with some fabulous questions.
Yeah, voice is enormous, I think, for us to realize that you can make a difference, to realize that you can be heard. In fact, I was just this morning at our morning meeting. We meet in the school every day, the entire school community, and one of the students was talking. He had his hands in his pockets, and I said, "Don't ever speak in public with your hands in your pockets, because you make yourself small. You don't want to be small. You want to be able to command the space." So going from that to them being able to think critically and to raise issues that, in a way, that you have a chance of influencing what goes on. So we frequently, the adults at our place will frequently pick fights, so to speak, that we want to lose, because it's important for the kids to realize that they can influence the way people think and they can get change and that goes on all the time. And to be proud of each other. To be proud of each other. Because if our kids aren't proud of each other, nobody else is going to be proud of them, believe me. In fact, they'll find ways of criticizing them. So the pride in one another in the community is, I think, very, very important. And Jonathan picked that up when he was a young man with us, and has certainly carried it out in his adult life.
Speaking of voice, Reverend Nichols, the voice of MLK Jr. is recognizable all these years later, right?
Absolutely.
When was the first time you heard the voice of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.?
The first time I actually heard the voice of Dr. King was actually, I would say, very young adolescence. Back in Memphis, my church was actually the closest sanctuary to the Lorraine Motel where he was shot, directly behind the Lorraine Motel. So Dr. King and his oratory work has always been a part of my life in church and also in school. I find it amazing. I was doing some research recently on King's speeches, and to see the connect that 7 days before he was assassinated, he was right here in New Jersey, actually right here in Newark, New Jersey, on the south side. So I'm looking forward to actually trying to find some transcript to hear that voice. But I remember when I first heard the voice of Dr. King, it became so impressionable that I couldn't forget it. You can't forget the sound. You can't forget the voicing of what we would consider now in rhetorical circles, the authentic black rhetoric. You hear everything that is mirrored in what is being taught in seminaries now about engagement, about critical thinking, about critical engagement, about the critique of the systems of the world, and most of all, doing it authentically, where people years from the initial delivery of the speech can continue to listen to it and hear how impactful those words are still today. His words and his voice, the resonance and the prophetic impulses that it have, that it has, I still feel the same way about it. It's as if it is fresh every single time. So from the first time that I can remember being young to even now, it's a very familiar and very deeply touching sound that I still can recognize.
The youth at Bethany Baptist Church that you come across, how do you connect the message of Dr. King to them? How do you relay it? How do you talk to them about it? And how are they receiving it?
So we are very blessed and fortunate at Bethany that justice is not separated from the religious work that we do. There is no separation between the sacred and the secular, between the world and between our spiritual lives. So in that effort, we have a very amazing youth pastor, Reverend Portia Williams, who consistently implements social justice, who implements speech writing and speech delivery, and looking at these exemplars from great leaders like Dr. King into their everyday work. Every time that they gather, they're engaging in this work. So it is commonplace for them. It's nothing that is unfamiliar, but it is a very organic connection that the youth have with our church and the work that our church does. 148 years, going on 149 years later, that has always been the aim of the church. And so it is embedded within the culture of the church. And we're grateful for committees like the Lecture Committee who continue that work through our partnership, not just only in their committee area, but also intergenerationally with our youth ministries and our children's ministries.
We're speaking with Reverend Carlos Nichols, the Minister of Music at Bethany Baptist Church, along with Father Edwin Leahy, the headmaster of St. Benedict's Prep, who will be introducing the keynote speaker, Jonathan Capehart, who was a student at St. Benedict's Prep and now a member of the Washington Post, part of the editorial board, NBC, MSNBC contributor. He has his own podcast and, of course, won the Pulitzer Prize for his coverage of the Apollo Theater in Harlem, as well as the mismanagement there, and also trying to save the theater during that 2016 campaign, and Jackie Harris, who is chair of the Bethany Baptist Church Lecture Committee. Jackie, obviously, you know, you have Reverend Leahy here. Anyone can come to this program, right? You don't have to be just a member of Bethany Baptist Church.
You can be a member of any church or no church and to attend this program. This is for the greater community at large. This is a celebration of Dr. King's contributions. It's a celebration of people and mankind. And it is also a program to encourage dialogue and conversation with children, with adults. You know, Dr. King made an impact on the world. His outreach was not just to a certain class of people, certain sexes. It was for mankind, and this is what this celebration will do. I mean, so we will have, in a Baptist church, we're going to have the headmaster of St. Benedict's, which is a Catholic institution. So as we were just talking, you know, we're all one, and there's no difference. We just choose a different address to go to decide who and where we want to meditate. And this is what this is all about. Please, everyone who's listening, you are invited, and please come.
I'm a Baptist, too. You may not have known that, but I've been baptized, so I'm a Baptist.
Absolutely.
Is there enough synergy, Father Leahy, between, you know, the religions, especially here in Newark?
You know, that's a great question. I don't think there's ever enough that we all have different approaches to the same mystery. That's the point, that the mystery of the divine. Our problem is when we begin to name it. That's why the Jews always avoided naming God, because once you name it, you've limited the mystery, and it's God is essentially unknowable. We only know God because God makes God's self known to us in creation, in other people, and for those of us who are Christian, in the Lord. So there's never enough, I think, a dialogue. We can always do more. I think we lose the sight of the fact. I was just recently at something at St. Barnabas Medical Center for organ donation and transplantation. And it's very interesting to think about. It struck me as I was there that we actually have interchangeable parts when you think about it, mm-hmm. that you can take my heart and put it in someone else and it will work, right? Then we're made in God's image, and we're much closer and united than we spend most of our time trying to divide ourselves and divide each other and divide groups. And it's in one sense blasphemous, because that's not the way God created us.
Jackie, if MLK Jr. was still here, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., he walked into the studio today, what's the first question you would have for him?
I would ask him how, through his life of enduring such great problems and troubles and marginalization, where did he get the courage to continue to represent people who even at times didn't understand him or didn't care?
Courage indeed. That's, you know, probably where I would go too if I sat down with him, because you talk about the great people that have come through our history, and you talk about the courage. We just, you know, had the movie Harriet for Harriet Tubman. Talk about courage and strength and what she had to endure to, you know, to escape slavery and then go back and get rest of her family and friends. It's like, that is just absolutely amazing. And it always, you know, makes me think, where do these people get this courage? You know, Reverend Nichols, music is such a part of Bethany Baptist Church. It's synonymous, you know, with the Jazz Vespers and that. You have to take also great pride in this. As you were putting this program together, how much pressure do you feel? Do you have him right by your ear? Is Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. like right behind your head saying, I'll go for that one. I'd like that tune for my program.
Yes, it is programmed with very deep intent, knowing also the very deep respect that Dr. King had for music and for what music did for the movement. We all know the story about how Mahalia, the woman, was the one who told him to shoot for the king, the I Have a Dream ending at the end of his speech. And so knowing the respect and the admiration that he had for music and good music, not just some any old kind of music, but he loved good music. He loved jazz. He loved blues. So taking that into account, we have an amazing senior pastor, Reverend Timothy Atkins Jones, who has a deep appreciation for various styles of music. And so within the culture of our church, we have tried to embrace, and I think we're doing it quite effectively, all different styles of music. Bethany's known for jazz. Historically, Bethany is known for the hymns, the anthems, the spirituals, and also for gospel music. So in the planning of that, we try to make sure that the authentic Bethany is seen, and that also that it is music of hope. It's music of a continued push to do the work. I heard you mention Harriet. One of my favorite quotes from that movie is, "I will not stop until all of my children, my family are free." So music that leans into prophetic hope, and most of all, a unity that we all can do this work. So if it can be heard through music, then that is what we're aiming to do with this program.
Please get Cynthia Erivo to come to Bethany Baptist Church, too. You want somebody to sing, right?
Absolutely.
She is absolutely spectacular. I want to ask you, too, you know, you mentioned how Reverend Atkins Jones is the pastor. Obviously, he had huge shoes to fill with Dr. Howard, you know, spending so many years here in Newark, so respected. What an unbelievable person Dr. Howard is. So how has been the transition for you?
The transition has been great. I am one of Atkins Jones's, I believe I'm his second hire. The transition, Bethany is an amazing congregation that is always looking to evolve, that is always looking to stay current. And I believe that Dr. Howard had his shoes, and I also believe that Pastor Atkins Jones, soon to be Dr. Atkins Jones, is blazing an amazing path at our church. We were speaking earlier about the conversations between different sects, between different religious affiliations. One of his pushes has always been, since his tenure has been there, and I've seen some of the groundwork for this, is that the doors of Bethany are open to everyone. They're open to all people, regardless of, you should be able to find a place where you are accepted and you are welcome in that space, regardless of your background. So we have members that are actually what could be sometimes, well, not members, visitors that a double belonging, that find comfort in, you know, finding their religious path. And so we're so grateful that Pastor Atkins Jones is willing to create that space and to evolve the church into what it is and into this amazing, diverse community that Bethany is becoming, and in all aspects.
Jackie, I'm going to ask you the same question. How about the transition?
Well, so I knew Dr. Howard before I actually joined Bethany. When I joined Bethany, Reverend Jones was there. Dr. Howard is a clergy, but Dr. Howard is very much a civil rights activist. He's a social justice activist. And that was the spirit in the church, as well, you know, as well as dealing with spiritual matters. But Dr. Howard is very much in touch with and actively involved in justice for all. Reverend Jones he's a different generation, and his approach is different, but I see them all one and the same. I was quite impressed. I call myself the newbie because I've been at the church maybe two and a half years, and I've been living in Newark for 3 years. And so when I first attended, I felt something special and different in Bethany, in that you get the same message. You get a theological approach to social justice and civil rights in Reverend Jones's sermons. And, you know, that keeps you curious, it keeps you interested, and it attracts young people to the church.
Father Leahy, Jackie brought up the civil rights movement. A lot of times we hear that, you know, when it comes to educating our youth, that the civil rights movement, that social justice issues aren't enough of our history books and aren't enough in education. What are your thoughts on that, and how do you try to present that at St. Benedict's Prep?
Well, first let me say something about the transition at Bethany. Bethany has gone through transition after transition after transition because of its long, long, long history in Newark. I remember Bethany Baptist Church when it wasn't on West Market Street where it is now, in the new church. I remember the old church. And those of us in town were saying, who is going to fill the shoes of Jim Scott? But William Moses Howard did a pretty good job of filling those shoes. And I'm sure the present pastoring responsibility, the shoes of Dr. Howard will be filled quite well. Now, relative to your question, we don't do anything for young people that young people can do for themselves. That's one of the keys, I think, to our approach to accompanying kids in through their teenage years. Don't do for them what they can do for themselves, and to celebrate who they are. an interesting thing. Jackie and I were speaking before we began to talk to each the three of us here. The two of us were talking about Dr. John Johnson, who's a professor over at the St. Peter's University, who taught me a very, very interesting thing that I never would have thought of myself, and that is the issue of legacy in the African American community. And one of the problems he believes that we have in urban education is a problem of legacy, because all the buildings in our cities in our country all have a story. And the story was always told and passed on from one ethnic group to another ethnic group over the course of decades and decades and decades. And when the African-American community arrived, no one transmitted the story to them. So you hear things like Shabazz used to be a great school. Newark used to be a great city. And that used to be, if you're the ones living in the city or going to Shabazz or Westside, and you hear used to be, well, you're thinking, well, what's wrong with us? Because no one communicated that history. And what happens in some sense, by chance at our place, we didn't plan it, but people taught us a lot. We learned early on what they learn in self-help meetings, and that is to shut up and listen, right? To take the cotton out of your ears and stick it in your mouth. And we were actually taught, meaning the members of our monastic community and teachers who were at that time all white, we were taught how best we could accompany people through life rather than overlay our own view of the way things ought to be, right? So this sense of what's been passed on in the community, which Bethany is a great example of because it's such an old church, old congregation here in Newark and in New Jersey, is this legacy, this passing on the history of our people and then the connection of our people to the people that have gone before them, right? That we haven't done a very good job of the dominant culture in this country right now. It won't be the dominant culture for very long. The kids growing up now the dominant culture in this country will be black and brown people, which I think is what makes a lot of white people nervous, because they begin to think, wait a minute, if they treat us the way we treated them, we got a big problem. But I think this legacy issue is what we've tried to work at.
I want to talk about respect. You command such respect at your school. You lay down the law. You're not somebody who's just going to let, you know, the kids get away with whatever they want to do. Where do you draw where's that fine line between being too tough and but yet also having the students respect and understand what the message is? You've worked on it for a long time, but I've seen how students react to you. What do you want to say about that?
Well, I've had the privilege of being raised twice. I think that's what I would say about that. I was raised by my mother and father in a nuclear family in the suburbs. I went to school at St. Benedict's Prep. But then I was raised again by the African American and then later by the Latino community here in Newark. So people taught me a lot and embraced me, loved me into a different kind of way of being, I would say. I remember one Sunday I used to listen to the Clarence Thomas, the longtime pastor of New Hope Baptist Church. By luck, I discovered him on 1280, right at the time when he was giving his sermons on Sunday. I used to listen to him all the time. And then I became friends with Bill Watley while he was pastor at St. James AME, and he would give me copies of his sermons. And one Sunday, I was preaching in Blessed Sacrament Church in Newark, which is a old African-American Catholic church. And I said something and somebody answered me, and I was like stunned because and little by little, I learned how to preach in an idiom that was helpful to them. So I would say that I think I'm respected because by the kids, because I listened to them. And they've taught me a lot. And you can't command or demand respect. You have to earn it from them, from the kids. And to realize that, oh, I live here, So I hear the same sirens. I deal with the same deaths. I rejoice in the same occasions that cause rejoicing, because I've been allowed, underlining allowed, I've been allowed to become part of this community.
We're speaking with Father Edwin Leahy, the headmaster of St. Benedict's Prep, Reverend Carlos Nichols, the minister of music at Bethany Baptist Church, and Jackie Harris, the chair of the Bethany Baptist Church Lecture Committee. That committee has the program coming up this Sunday celebrating the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It's Sunday at 2:30. Reverend Nichols, you know, when I covered an event in 1999 for WBGO, it was one of the most spectacular things. I came back from seeing Rosa Parks visit a school in East Orange, the Cicely Tyson School of Performing Arts. And it moved me so much because these students knew everything about Rosa Parks. They were ready for her. When Cicely wheeled her in the wheelchair, they had harp ensembles. They had poetry. They had jazz ensembles. They had everything, and they knew everything about her. Do the young people at Bethany Baptist Church know everything they need to know about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.?
If I could make a good projection, I would say yes. Most of all of our students attend amazing schools, public and private, and then also through the engagement of the church, that many of them receive a very great culturally responsive education. So when the name Martin Luther King Jr. comes up, Dr. Martin Luther King, it's nothing that is foreign. Many of them are very inquisitive, where if we also provide them sometimes just with some surface level information, that they become divergent and they start thinking and gathering facts on their own. Actually, this evening we're having a rehearsal intensive orientation where we're actually going to be digging into some of the things about Dr. King. We also make sure that Dr. King is not separated from his work, and also from the fact that Dr. King was a Baptist preacher. People quite often dismiss that notion because of his itinerant speaking schedule, but many of his itinerant speaking schedules were actually itinerant preaching engagements at Baptist churches that were engaged in the movement at the time, and then other interfaith spaces where he entered. So this cultural responsive education that they received has helped us and make them very much aware, and to continue to guide them on discovering deeper into who we celebrate at our church yearly. It's not just something that happens once a year, but they know that Dr. King is very highly respected at our church, and that his work continues and it informs the way that we move.
As minister of music, you would know this a lot better than most, but music adds so much to the Mass. It adds so much more to programs, and when people can get inspired by music, kids who are just little toddlers love music. It's so powerful. When did you know that music was moved you?
As a child, I was blessed to grow up in a house. My mother was a musician, actually. So I can remember growing up and there being an electric piano in our house and walking up to that electric piano and just pushing the keys. I don't even know if I knew what it was. But there was something about touching the keys of the piano, that tactile involvement, that propelled me into being a musician. But also, Saturday mornings at my house, every week, the windows were raised, my mom was cleaning, and there was blues music playing, because down at WDIA, Rufus Thomas had his blues show every Saturday morning. And so it was a part of my everyday life. I believe that even today, music is that driving force for our youth and our children. They identify, they hear ideals, they hear they hear the political aims that they should be, you know, engaged in through music. So I think that music is still, it's absolutely that force of engagement that is unparalleled to none. You know, sometimes we can't sit and listen to a speech for 15 minutes, but we can turn on the radio and listen to music and engage with it, and it becomes a part of our soul because music comes directly from the soul. So what's coming from one soul is reaching the other soul.
All different kinds of music today, much more the language is much more controversial. How do you feel about that?
I try not to project any judgments on the use of language because I believe it is always taken into context. What may work for one may not work for the other. But there's also a very intentional focus that we have to have on how people's artwork is informed. Why is their word choice such? I was able to sit in on a lecture with Dr. Tamara Lomax, and she was speaking about the trap queen. And these are the women who are fortunate enough in the industry to express themselves through music that may seem vulgar to others. However, it is actually a gender power move for women to re-identify themselves in this trap queen movement. So in that also helped me to renegotiate some of my own biases that I may have had towards some of the trap queen movements. Some you may know as some may know, you're probably going to do some research now on the City Girls and Megan the Stallion. One of the largest ones that many people may know is Nicki Minaj. So what are those ways of re-identifying themselves and taking the power back from male subjectivity? So some of the language may seem offensive, but I can remember that back in the 50s and the 60s when people were talking about dancing together or kissing through music, people were saying, don't say that in a song. But now it's just commonplace and we can see it everywhere. So I believe culturally we continue to evolve.
Jackie, since your committee is presenting Celebrating the Life and Legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. this Sunday at Bethany Baptist Church, I'm going to let you get the last word in. What would be a comment that you would love to hear as either someone who's been a member of Bethany Baptist Church for a long time or a newbie or possibly a young person? What would be the comment that would make you smile and say, we did it again?
Very easy. That was a great presentation. I really enjoyed it, and I'm coming back next year.
What an honor to have Jackie Harris with us here, the chair of Bethany Baptist Church's lecture committee. Father Edwin Leahy, the headmaster at St. Benedict's Prep School right here in Newark, and Reverend Carlos Nichols, the minister of music at Bethany Baptist Church. Thanks to all of you for taking the time and for this program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the honor.